My name is Dr. Joe Rubino, and I'd like to welcome you all to the first of a three-part series on the importance of self-esteem as it has an impact on your lives and your businesses. This evening, we're going to be talking about the first of the three sessions, and that is completing your past and healing any of the incompletions that perhaps might still be troubling you. This is going to be the first of three sessions, and we're going to be speaking this evening about completing your past, healing any of the incompletions that are draining your energy and keeping you from being most effective in the world, happiest, most productive, and most fulfilled. So I'm going to invite you to jot down some questions as they come up, and I'm going to invite you to also be prepared to participate in the call, because my commitment is to support all of you to get maximum value out of this call. And I'm not sure if you heard me say this before, but we will be recording the call, so if it serves you to take notes, you can do so, and if you'd rather just listen, you can do that as well. This evening, we're going to start with a basic overview of what is self-esteem and why is it important to complete your past. Now, self-esteem is basically the ability to be competent and to be able to cope with life's challenges as they come down the pike, and to be happy, fulfilled, and productive. Research shows that more than 85% of the world's population suffer lacking self-esteem in at least one or more areas. And as you all know, self-esteem deficiency is the cause of conflicts, ineffective communication, negative emotions, broken relationships, divorce, and even war. So all of the terrorism that's going on in the world today, the high divorce rate, the disharmony in the world, it all can be traced back to origins of lacking self-esteem. For people that express their anger or their fear or their sadness by taking it out on others and trying to dominate or control them and avoid being dominated by them. So high self-esteem is a prerequisite for fulfillment, for happiness, for accomplishment, for developing respect and empathy for others, and for taking responsibility for making our lives work. It's also necessary for the critical element of self-motivation and positive expectation, which is a critical factor in business success. So that you'll find those of you that are involved in business, whether that's traditional business, network marketing, or any other type of business, you'll find that those people that are most easily rejected, the people that are most easily deterred from their goals, are those that lack self-esteem and lack the self-motivation that comes from a belief that you are going to succeed ultimately in achieving your goals. So high self-esteem is actually the ability to deal with challenges effectively and know that you can overcome whatever problems come down the pike. What I mean by that is that when you have high self-esteem, you have a reserve, and you know that you have the resources or you can get the resources that will allow you to be most powerful and most ability to impact a result. You must love yourself in order to be able to love others. And so self-esteem is also the access to intimacy and to close relationships, and to speaking in such a way that you let people into your lives and into your businesses. Low self-esteem is also most commonly associated with criminal behavior, with drug and alcohol addiction, with violence of all kinds, eating disorders, school dropouts, and low socioeconomic status. It's also the source of aggressive and egotistical behavior, and also harmful and defensive type behavior, because when people feel as though they're not worthy, they're not good enough, it often manifests in such a way that they feel like they have to protect themselves. And that leads to arguments, it leads to unhealthy behavior where communication breaks down and people look to protect themselves. All our behavior is either an expression of love or an expression of fear. And what happens when we have diminished self-esteem is that we don't have the confidence that the world will provide us with everything that we need, and so we act out of fear. And when we act out of fear, we generate fear as a response, just as when we act out of anger, we generate anger as a response. So high self-esteem is actually not only the access to a life of happiness, but it's an access to supporting others to be their best. So those of us that are in leadership or who aspire to leadership, it's the ability to see people as greater than they see themselves. And we're going to talk a little bit about that as we go, because that's a critical element to supporting people to be successful in business and in life. Low self-esteem starts with the observation that we don't measure up in some way. We judge ourselves harshly. We think that we don't belong and that we act from these assumptions as though they're true. Now, usually it starts early in childhood from somewhere between the age of 0 to 6 years old, and it can be as high as the age of 12 years old, typically. But for most people, it's in those early formative years that something happens where we buy into or we misinterpret something that someone said or did to mean that we're flawed, we're unworthy, or we're unlovable. And from that misinterpretation or from what someone said, we decide that we don't measure up, and we start to see the world from that perspective, which constantly gets reinforced time after time with every passing incident. Whenever someone else says something, we interpret it from the colored glasses that we don't measure up, and we start to react. We start to become defensive, and by doing so, we create a vicious cycle that reinforces our sense of worthlessness. And that vicious cycle comes about because early on in life, we make something up about ourselves. It could be something as simple as a spanking, or it could be when someone calls us a name, maybe an ethnic slur, or maybe someone refers to us as stupid or lazy, anything that has us feel as though we're not worthy. That first blow to our self-esteem is often from a parent or an authority figure. It causes us to stop the process of growing and nurturing in our development so that instead of feeling good about who we are and feeling good about our relationship with other people, we now start to compare ourselves to others in a way that we find that we're inadequate. And when we do so, we cover up, we retreat, or perhaps we go the other way. We become more aggressive, we become angry, and we attack. Many children who have problems with other kids where they're bullies or they are very aggressive in their behavior, it's because they don't feel good about themselves. So it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy that we create where we actually get what we expect because the initial episode happens where we start to think, well, you know, maybe there's something wrong with us here. And then something else happens or someone says or does something, and from that initial interpretation that there's something wrong with us, we now get that interpretation reinforced. So the second episode occurs to reinforce the first. Let's say that someone calls us stupid when we're young, and then we get a spanking. We get a spanking which reinforces the fact that we must be bad and we must be stupid. And then someone says something else that could be totally innocent. Perhaps the child's mother might leave the child in the car and go to the store, and the child makes up that I'm not good enough, and that's why my mom is punishing me, leaving me here. Or the parents might become divorced, and the child decides, if I were good enough, mom and dad would still be here with me. And so there's literally thousands of different possibilities that could be happening that cause children to decide that there's something wrong with them, that they're unlovable, not worthy, not good enough. All that we as parents can do is to love our children, to nurture them the best that we can, to reinforce to them how magnificent they are, how worthy they are, how lovable they are. And in spite of all of that, know that kids are going to make up just as people are going to make up whatever they make up. All we can do is provide as nurturing and positive a scenario as we can. We'll be talking more about that as we go on this evening and in the next two sessions. So when we label ourselves as unworthy or unlovable or not good enough, it causes us severe pain. In our attempt to avoid that pain and avoid further pain, we withdraw. We avoid communication. We stop interacting with other people. We stop risking. And we give up our dreams eventually, and we lower our expectations to avoid being hurt or disappointed. And what that looks like is playing small. It looks like playing safe. It looks like instead of risking boldly and taking a chance, initiating a conversation with a stranger, or taking a risk in business, or asking someone for a date, it looks like holding ourselves as unworthy and expecting the rejection that allows us to hide. It allows us to be defensive instead of offensive. So not only do we give up all of the things that are important to us, but we tell ourselves that there's just no use. We settle for less, and then we justify our actions to protect us from further harm. And all of this leads to a severe resignation. It leads to a death of our spirit. It leads to a loss of vitality and, of course, a worsening of our self-opinion, where every time it happens, it's more and more evidence that we just gather to constantly reinforce that what we made up about ourselves is true because look at all the evidence that happens. And a good example of that is We make up that we're unlovable, that no one wants to be our friend, for example. And what will happen is that we will retreat. We won't make friends. We won't be overly social. And as a result of our withdrawal, people respond to that withdrawal by not being our friend. And so our worst fear now becomes not only magnified but confirmed. And this vicious cycle goes over and over, where we constantly settle for less, we justify our actions to protect us from further harm, and before we know it, all of the aspects of our lives become dimmed, or at least the aspects where we suffer the lacking self-esteem. As I mentioned, there are many different types of lacking self-esteem. There is both situational self-esteem, where someone is lacking self-esteem in a particular area. So, for example, someone might be really smart and excel in school, but maybe they feel like they're ugly, or they feel as though they're stupid, or they feel as though they're socially incompetent. And so in that area, they will continue to sabotage themselves, and maybe they will overcompensate in another area. Maybe they're good in sports, and so they'll devote their life to sports or to business or to anything that gives them pleasure and allows them to avoid the pain of dealing with what they've made up about themselves. And I want to stress the fact that it's all made up, because we're all inherently magnificent. We all can manifest whatever we want in our lives, and we all have that magic wand at birth that allows us to wave it over our lives and to create the reality that we believe that we deserve. And the self-motivation that I spoke of a little while ago is like a thermostat. What happens is, when we expect to be abundant and to have friends and to be both lovable and in love and to be fulfilled and have all of the good things in life, we generate a positive expectation so that our actions are in alignment with that belief. So what that looks like is we do the things that produce what we expect. If we expect to be wealthy, we do the things that bring wealth to us. If we expect to have friends, we're social and we're gregarious. If we expect to do well in the world, then our actions are in alignment with that expectation, and it produces that self-fulfilling prophecy. Now, the opposite is also true. If we feel as though we're not good enough, that we're unworthy, that we're unlovable, our expectation is that we're going to be rejected, that we're going to be hurt, that we're going to be in more pain if we risk. So our actions are defensive. They're muted. They're not bold. We don't risk. And as a result, we bring about that expectation by self-sabotage. We actually create the thing that we fear the most out of expecting it. Most of us are somewhere in between these two extremes, where we have total positive expectation. And I'll give you an example in the arena of money. If you look at someone like Donald Trump, his expectation is that he will always be wealthy. And so he risks boldly. He does the sorts of things that attract wealth to him. Now, he's been bankrupt a number of times because his actions don't always bring about the intended result. There might be a real estate crash or a stock market crash or whatever. But what happens is his bankruptcy, his downward financial situation is always temporary. And what he'll always do is, because he has a positive expectation for success, he'll always find a way to go and build more wealth than he had in the first place before the decline. So that's an example of this self-fulfilling prophecy. But most of us, as I mentioned, fall somewhere in between the ultra-positive expectation and the ultra-negative expectation. What we generally come to expect in our lives is more of the same that we've had for our past lives. And we look for evidence to justify where we are and to expect more of what we've experienced. And what that translates into is apathy. We create just enough self-motivation to move ourselves forward to get the sort of results that we expect. And then whenever we start experiencing more than we expect, maybe we let up on the gas pedal. We don't try as hard. We start to have the negative self-talk, which we'll talk more about in just a few minutes, affect us. And so the result is that, like that self-regulating thermostat, we kind of seek the level that we're most familiar with and most comfortable with and most aligns, the level that most aligns with our expectation. So this loss of self-esteem really causes our smallest mistakes to be magnified tremendously. And we think incorrectly that everyone thinks that we're inadequate, even though we ourselves initially are the only ones who judge ourselves to be inferior. And we blame ourselves for everything that goes wrong. Now, what happens is that the more we do that, the more our energy becomes shifted and the more people interact with us from that distorted energy that we're giving off in the world. Because when we have a positive expectation and a strong belief in ourselves, we give off positive charismatic energy and we attract people to us with that energy. And when we give off negative vibes, people go away from us. And that is why in our businesses, for example, we tend to attract the type of people that are in alignment with our energy. So one of the great yardsticks to determine who we are and what we're attracting is if we are in alignment with positive energy, we will surround ourselves with positive people, people who are happy and fulfilled and prosperous and abundant and wealthy and all of that. And if we find that we're attracting people that have a poverty mindset, people that are angry or fearful or sad, then it's probably because it's consistent with our energy. Inconsistent energy does not attract itself. It will eventually seek out its own level of energy so that someone who is happy won't be around someone who is sad or angry for very long. They'll seek out other happy people. Now, one of the other challenges to diminished self-esteem is that we actually seek perfection because we feel as though we're not perfect. And the more that we feel as though we're not perfect, the more we strive for that perfection. And because we can't ever achieve the perfection, it constantly reinforces our low self-opinion because we constantly get reminder after reminder that there is something wrong with us. The other thing that this will do oftentimes, it'll cause us to be driven. And when we feel like we're not good enough, what we'll tend to do is we'll tend to overcompensate oftentimes in an area. And so people that are typically driven in business, for example, are often making up for feeling unworthy in some other area. Maybe it's relationships, maybe it's appearance, maybe it's social communication, maybe it's an intimate relationship, whatever. The driven personality is on a treadmill constantly trying to prove that he or she is good enough. And like the proverbial ladder that extends into the clouds, where the person climbs the ladder thinking, I'll get to the top soon, no matter how high you climb, you see that the ladder keeps going higher and higher into the clouds. In other words, you'll never get to that perfect stage. And because you'll never get to that state, you constantly reinforce your low self-esteem and your low self-opinion. And one of the things that I want to really stress this evening, and if you come away with nothing else from this call, it's that no one, except for ourselves, can diminish our self-esteem. And no one, except for ourselves, can restore our self-esteem. And freedom, the ultimate freedom, comes from a non-attachment to other people's opinions. Now, what I mean by that is that when we are so self-confident that we can accept feedback from other people, but we try it on like a coat, and if it has value, we look there to improve ourselves because we're committed to personal development. But if we hear something negative and it's not a fit, then we don't own it. We are not attached to other people's opinions or their words. So we don't let other people bother us. We're not in the reaction mode, which we're going to speak a little bit more about very shortly. So let me take a break here. I've been talking for almost a half hour here and see if there are any questions so far, anything that anyone wants to bring up at this point before we continue.
Yeah, Joe, this is Chuck.
Hi, Chuck. Good to have you on the call.
Yeah. I just moved to a new neighborhood, and there's some people, I don't know, they go by, they feel like waving, they wave, they don't feel like it, they don't wave, you know, I get a little hot-headed, it kind of pisses me off, so, man, what's their problem, you know? And then the other day, exactly what you spoke about, like this guy's business partner came by, waved, and he smiled, you know, or laughed, I don't know what he did, but he waved, and then he picked up his partner, and they're going down the street, and I was outside doing yard work, and I waved to them. Neither one of them looked at me or anything, and they just drove straight on, you know, and I says, well, maybe they just didn't see me, or even if they did see me and they didn't want to wave to me, I don't own that. I don't, you know, it does. It's like I all of a sudden had developed a shield where it didn't affect me. You know, I didn't react emotionally and get pissed off like I would a lot of times. So what I'm saying is that it just pretty much goes to validate what you just said right now. If you don't own it, if you don't read more into it than there is, then you don't give it power, you know, and you attract better things to your life. Is that what you're getting at?
That's exactly what I'm getting at, and I'm going to take that one step further, Chuck. The tool that we're going to discuss next is a tool where we can actually remove that upset from our lives. So in a situation like that where, you know, someone's raking the leaves in the yard and you go by and you wave and they don't wave back, I'm going to suggest that you create another interpretation that leaves you in relationship with the person. So what would be an interpretation that has no anger attached to it for you, no sadness that they're not waving, something where you could just explain it, giving them the benefit of the doubt, putting yourself in their world for a moment?
Well, I listen to a lot of motivational tapes about this. Guy gets in the subway, and this other fella gets on, and he's got like three or four kids, and they're just, you know, jumping from the banisters, screaming and yelling and everything, and this guy gets kind of messed up. You know, he gets perturbed by it, and he finally says something. He says, "Sir," he says, "your kids, they're acting all crazy. How come you can't control them?" He says, "Well, their mother just died from the hospital. I guess they don't know how to react, you know." So what they're saying is that you have no idea what's going on in this person's life. You can't read their mind. You have absolutely no idea, and so you should just accept it for face value and not put any other meaning, no other interpretation that we would have on it. You know, like, well, they're just stuck up. They're, you know, they think they're better than us. They're condescending, or, you know, instead of putting a meaning to it, just accept it for face value. And would you go so far as to, well, maybe they found us some bad news, or they're in their own world, or, you know, that's an example that I've been hearing lately about how not to interpret for other people something they do that you might take offense at.
Chuck, that's a great example, and I know Stephen Covey tells that story, and it shows you that you don't know what's going on in their world. You know, one of the interpretations that I might adopt, because it was true for me, before I got glasses when I was a teenager, I was vain, and I didn't want to get glasses because I, again, didn't want people to think that, you know, I needed glasses because I wanted to look good. And so I would be walking down the street, and I couldn't tell who was across the street, literally. And people would wave or whatever, and many times I would just keep my head down because I couldn't tell who they were. And rather than risk further embarrassment, that was the way that I would just cope. And looking back on it, I could see that it was the worst thing that I could have possibly done, because what it did was it told people that I wasn't friendly, that I didn't want to make friends, that I was a snob or whatever. And what it really was I couldn't see. So, you know, we don't know what it's like in people's world. And what we can do is we can assume that they're doing the best that they know how to do. And, you know, we don't condone their actions because, you know, people mess up. They do hurtful things. They do stupid things sometimes. But if we can put ourselves in their world for a moment and ask ourselves, what might it be like to be them in that moment, to have them do what they did? We can now develop an empathy for them in a way that we wouldn't have before. So instead of becoming angry, we now are maybe empathetic, where we give them the benefit of the doubt. So that's just, thank you for bringing that up. That actually is going to be a great way for us to segue into the old negative self-talker, which is on our shoulder. The self-esteem book, I call that person Chip.
Yeah.
And what that person does, whether it's a female or a male voice, is that negative self-talker is there to protect us from harm. It's there to protect us from risk, to keep us safe. And what we typically do with that negative self-talk is we listen to this voice that tries to keep us from being hurt. So we play small, we resign ourselves to selling out our dreams, we consider ourselves to be unworthy so we don't risk. All of these things are in reaction to this negative voice that talks to us in such a way where we start to believe that we're not good enough, that we're not capable of achieving anything that we want, that we're not capable of attracting abundance to us, or deep, rich relationships, or, you know, our ideal spouse or person. So when we listen to that self-talk, the result is that we keep ourselves protected, but we also keep ourselves from experiencing all the joys that come from risking. if we're not attached to failure or the possibility of failing, then we can risk and know that we're better off risking and trying and getting whatever we get from that risking than hiding and playing safe and really listening to the negative self-talker. So some of the ways that we can effectively manage that negative self-talk is to actually begin to manage our interpretations aggressively. And Chuck, you were just kind enough to give us a great example of what that looks like with respect to managing those interpretations. We also can replace negative self-talk with affirmations, with positive acknowledgments for ourselves, where we can start to feed our minds with reinforcements about how excellent we are as opposed to what's wrong with us. Now, it's often helpful to get to the source of our feelings of unworthiness. And so let me talk for a minute a little bit about the glue that actually keeps this whole lacking self-esteem in place. And as I mentioned, it usually starts when we're a young child, and it starts with an episode that happened to us. And as I'm going to be mentioning a bunch of different types of episodes, I'm going to ask you to look back for a moment into your childhood and to see if any of these ring a bell for you or something similar. I'll give you a number of examples. The first is a child asks for a special toy for Christmas or for Hanukkah. Instead of receiving that special toy, maybe the parents were somewhat strapped financially, maybe they're from the old school, and the child receives a sweater. And so instead of just not making something up about it, the child makes up that I must not be worthy of a toy, or else why would my parents give me this? The child might make up, my parents don't love me because they know how badly I wanted the toy and they didn't give it to me. Another example that I mentioned was when a new brother or sister comes on the scene. And the child makes up, there must be something wrong with me for mom and dad to want another baby in the house. And so I retreat or I become aggressive, maybe hit the baby or whatever, or act out to try to get my parents' attention. And all of that further alienates me from my parents, and it reinforces what I felt about it. Another example, the abandonment issue. And maybe a child is left in a car while mom runs into a store, and the child wakes up and sees no one's around and feels abandoned and makes up that I'm not lovable. And to a child, to be abandoned at an early age of 0 or 1 or 2, that's death to the child. Another common episode is when a child decides that they're bad. Maybe they started a fire, or maybe a child hurt a sibling, or talked back, or had bad thoughts which came true. Something that reinforces that they're bad and they're not worthy and they're not lovable or worthy of all of the good things. Oftentimes, a parent might scold a child or call a child stupid. Or a big traumatic episode is when a child is abused by a father or an uncle or a grandfather or someone else that he or she trusts. And so now the child not only doesn't trust people, but internalizes that I must be not worthy or worth much for people to do this to me, to abuse me. Or perhaps a child overheard a conversation about money and felt guilty for being a burden to their family. So those are just a few different examples, and we all have our own typical story about what happened. But the methodology that happens is when we buy into or we make something up, it triggers an emotional response for us. And this emotional response is very critical. It's the red flag that tells us that something is going on. And that automatic emotional response is typically a form of anger, sadness, or fear. And the misinterpretation that we create that brings about that mood of anger, sadness, or fear leads to our diminished self-esteem. Let me stop for a moment and see if there is anyone that would like to have me work through an example of an early upset that they remember. We can make this alive for everyone on the call.